Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks. Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, you know, fire, flammables, an album that bumps eternally. And today, we'll be deep diving together into the 1960 debut album, At Last, by Etta James.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
In early 1960, a young 22-year-old from Watts, California, birth name Jamesetta Hawkins, walked into a Chicago studio to begin recording songs for what would become her debut album. The legendary LA bandleader and promoter Johnny Otis had met Hawkins years before and suggested a name change for marketing purposes, and thus Jamesetta became Etta James. Even though she had recorded a handful of singles dating back to the mid-50s, At Last was a magnum opus that opened a new phase of her career, turning her into one of the greatest blues and jazz singers of her era, with an album suffused in young love and heartbreak, romance and sorrow. As Amanda Petrusich put it for Pitchfork, quote, At Last remains one of the greatest records about loneliness ever made, a languid, jazz-inflected pain to reluctantly working it out on your own, unquote. The title song, of course, became iconic, famous enough that Beyoncé herself sang it at Obama's inaugural ball in 2008, not exactly to the delight of the still-living James, but At Last is far more than just a one-hit wonder. Its production, overseen by the legendary Chess Brothers of Argo, Cadet, and Chess Records fame, was both grand and intimate in its sound, lush enough to accent James's sentiments, but still letting her and that glorious, powerful voice shine. After all, if you look at the album title, it's not just At Last, it's At Last, with an exclamation point at the end. And no piece of punctuation seems more apropos when we think of Etta's affect.
At Last was the album pick of our guest today, Valerie June. Fall 2013, me and a couple of my girls posseed up to meet to see a show at the Bootleg, a venue in Echo Park that was swiftly becoming our favorite. We were excited about the guest, and I was dressed all the way up, including breaking in a new pair of stilettos, a decision I now realize was ill-advised, since the show was packed and standing room only. Ah, youth. Anyway, we made our way through the theater, posted up, so hyped to see an artist whose praises everyone was singing, present company included. And after a while, she appeared on stage, band-aids on all her fingers, stories to share with us, and the voice that made me and my girls swoon. When she got to You Can't Be Told, I yelled out at the top of my lungs, "This is my jam." Valerie June is from Memphis, like my father. She's a singer-songwriter whose debut album drew us to the show that night. She blends soul, blues, folk, and rock, and because of that, we stan. I remember that night, and I'm so glad that we pushed against the crowd to hear her perform Pushing Against a Stone. Her latest release dropped in June 2020. I am thrilled to have Valerie June in the studio to talk with us about Etta James. Valerie June, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you. I almost cried hearing you say that. Even the sound of your voice is just so beautiful to listen to you. So I'm honored to be on here.
Thank you. Honored to have you here. Why Etta James and why this album?
Wow. Etta James, At Last. What a powerful voice. I mean, as soon as I put the album on, the strength of her voice never leaves its force and its fierce power throughout. And so because I'm a vocalist first, yes, I do play instruments. I'm a multi-instrumentalist, but voices are the things that just draw me in every time. And hers is one that I've been studying for many years now.
Folks obviously can't see this, but Valerie is holding up her copy of At Last on vinyl for us right now, which is awesome.
Yes.
It's like a poster in my house. It's up all the time. So it's beautiful to look even at the record cover, the sunshine color of kind of golden backdrop, and then the profile image of her, which reminds me of what the label wanted to do for Pushing Against the Stones cover, where I was a profile image.
Right.
I mean, there's just so much inspiration and power in this record. Everything.
I never made that connection now, but now I'm never going to be able to unsee those similarities. Every time I look at either cover, is I'll have both you, Valerie, and Etta James's cover in sync in my mind. So that's lovely. Speaking of the album in particular, what was your introduction to that LP?
I believe I was just doing what I do as I travel throughout the country and the world, which is go to vinyl record shops, small independent shops, and go through the bins. And this one was there. And I was like, wait a minute, how do I not have that in my collection? I need to have that. Now, of course, everyone has heard At Last, and you've heard Stormy Weather and many of the songs that are on here, Sunday Kind of Love, but I mean, to own it on vinyl, you have to do it. You really have to. So it was one of those purchases that I made on tour, and I'm so grateful that I did, because before that, I just listened to it on Spotify.
And in general, what was your introduction to Etta James at all? Was it through At Last hearing it on the radio? Was it something you grew up in the house listening to? How did she land onto your musical radar to begin with?
Growing up, I can't say my folks listened to her music, but it was there. You'd watch a television show and one of the songs might be in it, or you would go somewhere and you would hear one of the songs in it. So she was kind of like in the background, which I think there was a period of her whole career that ended up feeling like she was in the background of the music world. Mm-hmm. And so for that to happen, I just think about that time period, so many decades or years where she was kind of obscure. So she was someone I had to dig into the bins for and behind this record and that record to get, which I think she should have always been on the front row. You know, she's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She should have always been there. But for the different reasons of challenges of life and being a real true blues singer, not just she lived the blues similar to the way that Billie Holiday lived the blues. And so that brought her where she was not just giving all of her love to us when she had made a record or got on stage, but she had dark things going on in her personal life that she needed to retreat and take care of. So that side of things, I guess, is one of the interesting parts too, that made me want to study her life and learn a little more about it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll definitely cycle back to that in just a moment. But Morgan, how about you? What was your intro to Etta James?
It's similar to Valerie's in that I can't recall a specific moment when I first came to know Etta James. She was just always there. Fast forward to me working on Selma and was looking for a song for a specific scene that we didn't end up putting music to. And Etta James was one of the people that we toyed around with possibly putting there. It was definitely going to be someone in that ilk. And Etta James, this particular album was one that I looked at, and I was looking for something from this album to place. So that's when I became a little bit more familiar with her. But heretofore, I think to me, she just represents me being a Black girl growing up and the sound of Blackness in her voice and just hearing her, just part of the culture.
Oh, honest I do. Don't you know that you are so sweet? Oh, if I could just hold your charm.
I mean, for me, it definitely At Last would have been that intro. And I think in an echo of both the comments the two of you have made, it's just such an iconic song, and it's been used in so many different places that I don't remember the first time I heard it, because it feels like it was just always around there. And I'll talk more about this in the second half, but I think probably my second introduction to a song to Etta James that wasn't At Last was Sunday Kind of Love, which I'm just going to, you know, as Morgan likes to say, confession is good for the soul. And I'm pretty sure my intro to that song was through an ad for khakis. But we'll come back to that in the second half and elaborate a little bit more. Valerie, I love the points you're making about the influence and just Etta James's stature as a blues singer, first and foremost, because I think one of the things about Etta's career is that it spans, of course, multiple eras of black music coming, starting, you know, as early as the mid 50s when she first started recording, and then obviously through the success in the early mid 60s with At Last. And then she moves into, as soul music blossoms and takes things in a different direction, she tries to stay with that trend, but unevenly. And one of the things that really strikes me around just the arc of her career is that even though Etta would have a very long, very prolific career, she never was able to return to the same heights that she achieved with At Last. And it's kind of one of those stories that you hear about in the music industry where someone comes out the gate in this immense way. But the downside is that the success of that early work ends up, in a sense, overshadowing everything that comes out afterwards, because you're held to this almost impossible standard of replicating or exceeding this immense debut. And Etta, to me, seems to fall into that category, because there was never another album that reached the same heights, at least critically, that At Last did, or that would be so defining in the same way that that album was for her.
When I do look at this record, I read the liner notes and it says that she wanted to be known as a pop singer who could do the songs like Stormy Weather and Sunday Kind of Love, as well as rock ballads. And I think of her, and I remember when she passed, reading in the paper that blues singer Etta James had passed. And I was like, blues singer, only blues singer. Why wouldn't we list more? And even in the way I speak about her, we speak about when she started the journey, but she got into so many genres. She's even done collaborations with rappers. And so I think when she released this record and the power and the strength behind her voice and everything, we as listeners wanted to hold her there, but she was an artist. She wanted to play and dabble in all kinds of music. And so we have to allow her to do that as listeners, even now, because her voice is still with us. It's still just as present today as it was then.
I hear exactly what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying. And I think part of the reason we hold her to that blue standard is one, because of Chess Records. And even though she's on Argo, Chess is blues. And so when you think of Chess, you think of Little Walter, you think of you think of Howling Wolf, you think of all those blues artists. Also, too, I think it's her singing from her chest. And the way that we see gospel singers, that they're in their throat, that there are all these runs. And so that power, I think, we tend to associate with blues. And I also think that we see blues as a lived experience. And because she had these things in her life that were challenging and really hard, that lifestyle we associate with blues as opposed to any other type. Is it fair? No, it isn't. But I think that's just the way we came to see her as a blues singer. And then that power we associate with blues singing as opposed to any other thing. And so even in prep for the chat, listening to some of her other albums, I still hear that chesty, that growl, that blues, and it's hard for me to get away from that. Even in her gospel record, I still hear that chest sort of singing. And so I 100% agree with your point. Is she more well-versed than that? Does she live outside of blues, her voice? 100%. It's just hard sometimes for me to hear something other than that because of where she sings from, because it's not in the throat, because it's in the chest. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I call that rust. Call it rust on her voice. I love it when I hear that rust.
Yes, indeed.
There's two thoughts that come to mind when it comes to Etta and her voice. The first is that if you were to talk about the two most powerful voices in R&B in the 60s, I feel like the two names that are going to come up are going to be Etta and then, of course, Aretha. But you would never confuse one with the other. And I think that has partly to do with the fact that Etta comes out of this blues tradition of belting that is about, you know, catharsis, or there's a level of passion and rage there. Whereas with Aretha, I really think of the power in her voice as being highly controlled. And even though she was given blues material to work with as early as her Columbia years, that you never, I guess I never really thought of Aretha as being a belter in the same tradition, even though, of course, I mean, just the level of sheer intensity with her voice, it's there. It's just not the same as the intensity that Etta brings. And then related to this is the other thing that I hear in Etta's voice is that even though she was so young when she recorded this album and she got her start, you know, years before that as a teenager, she always sounded wise beyond her years. And whether that's because she went through a lot of life experiences or simply was able to convey that, when you hear her on this, she doesn't sound like some kind of young, you know, early 20s ingenue. She's not naive. This is a woman who has seen things, who has been through things. And you hear that, you know, with every note that she sings.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Why don't you? You're trusting me in all you do. And have the faith I have in you.
Well, a couple of things, just a couple of things I wanted to say. One is that I found, as I was in prep for this chat, I found a video, maybe Christian can pull it up, of Aretha singing At Last. And she's singing it with Lou Rawls. And I'm only bringing it up to sort of illustrate sort of the difference in their voices. And I don't mean from a who's better. I just mean an approach to the song and how you can hear there's just this gospel that's pouring out of Aretha, which is so interesting because they have similar upbringings, right? Etta James grew up in the church. Aretha grew up in the church. But Aretha is a preacher's kid who admired, you know, Clara Ward and quartet singers. So I think how you present has a lot to do with who you idolize, right? Mm-hmm. Etta James, like Billie Holiday. So therein, to me, you know, there's the difference. And I just, if you could bring this up.
Yeah.
It's this thing, you know, we talk about flat-footed singing and we talk about all these intricacies and we talk about how a lot of times with gospel singers or gospel singers that become R&B singers, like it's one word, but that one word takes 5 minutes to get through because you're doing all this stuff. And I think that's the difference. It's the same song, but you hear so much gospel. I'm not saying that that's better. I'm just saying that it's different. That although I think Aretha, you know, did have power, but the power was in her throat. I have to keep going back to that distinction between throat and chest. And again, this is not to say anything is better, but I do want to say that there was mutual respect between both of the artists. And I found this quote. I guess this is an unauthorized biography of Etta James. And she says, it says, Etta James once recalled listening to Aretha Franklin's version of Johnny Mercer and Hoagie Carmichael's Standard Skylark. And in the second verse, Franklin jumps an octave. And Etta James says, I had to scratch my head and ask myself, how the F did that B do that? which I thought was dope. You know, I can't say it because you know my mother's going to be listening. So, but you know what I mean. And then she says, Etta says, I remember running into Sarah Vaughan, who always intimidated me. And Sarah said, have you heard of this Aretha Franklin girl? And I said, which is Etta said, you heard her do Skylark, didn't you? And Sarah Vaughan said, yes, I did, and I'm never singing that song again. but anyway, mutual respect for all the artists. But yes, Etta was a belter.
I just want to nerd out real quick because Aretha recorded two different versions of Skylark, and the performances are different enough where you wouldn't really confuse one for the other, and they're both incredible. And so I recommend people go out and hunt down her the first version of Skylark, and then look for the, I think it's just labeled as like the alternative version of it. And if you've never heard Aretha And I, people who listen to the show know I cape hard for Aretha's Columbia years because I feel like they're so undersung. And both versions of Skylark are Aretha in her early era at her very best. They're just so stunning.
Skylark, have you seen a valley green?
As you mentioned, Valerie, Etta James has Grammys. She's got 6 Grammys. She's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, no question. She's in the Grammy Hall of Fame. But yet, generally, when people think of Etta James, they only think of At Last. And I don't even mean the album. I just mean this one jam. And my question is, why do we miss the rest of her catalog? Why do people, in your opinion, why do you think people tend to gravitate just towards that song? I mean, in order to have 6 Grammys, you at least have to have 6 albums or 6 songs, right? So why is it that we just tend to focus on that, or why are we hyper-focused on that?
It has to be the delivery and the power of that, her voice in that song. Like, even though Aretha covered, did the song as well, she doesn't have the same phrasing. She's not coming from the same place as we've already discussed. And so just taking that into account, I think that is the defining point for the song being as popular as it is. But maybe also, I wonder if it's marketing. I wonder if that was just marketed more than any of the other albums or anything else she's done. I don't know. Sometimes I do wonder about how much the business affects what we know about an artist. So I wonder about that.
That's a good point. And I think that that song has been covered by so many people that it becomes Etta James' signature jam, and it obscures all the other songs. I remember having a conversation with Bilal a couple years ago, and he told me that if he didn't perform one of his famous songs, he would get heckled. And he was like, at this point, I've had so many other albums, but if I get through my set and don't perform that, he's like, people get mad. Like, I have to perform that. And I've always wanted to ask a singer, what does that feel like to have one song that people are like, you got to do that one? You're like, I've got, 200 albums. So just a question for you. Is there one song in your catalog that people are like, Valerie's got to do this one, she's got to do this one, or one that you get requested a lot to do?
Yes, I get requested a lot to do Working Woman Blues. Luckily, I don't get tired of playing it because there's always so many more notes I can hit for that song. But woo, I tell you, I can't get out of a place if I don't play it. Go back to Etta. Another song that's not on this record that really drew me in was there's a performance of her at Montreux Jazz Festival singing I'd Rather Go Blind.
Oh yes.
I watched that on repeat.
When the reflection in the glass that I held to my lips, babe, yeah. Reveal the tears that was on my face, yeah, babe.
And the look in her eyes, too, when she's singing, it's beyond just her physical self. I'm seeing all the way into all time with her, like, yeah, past, future, everything. The look in her eyes. It's deep.
Whoa, I'd rather be a blind girl than to watch you walk away from me, boy.
Well, on that note, we will be back with more of our conversation with Valerie June about Etta James's At Last after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
I'm going first. It's me, Jackie Cation.
Man, she's always this bossy. Hi. I'm Lori Kilmartin. We're a bunch of stand-up comics, and we've been doing comedy like 60 years total, both of us, but we look amazing.
Working out. We drop every Monday on Max Fun, and it's called The Jackie Lori Show, and you could listen to it and learn about comedy and learn about anger management and all the things.
And Jackie is married but childless, and I'm unmarried but child full. So together, we make one complete woman.
Is that just what that one's going to end?
Yeah. And we try to make Kyle laugh just like that and say, oh my God, every episode.
It's a good job.
Jackie and Lori Show, Mondays, only on Maximum Fun.
Hey, Jay Keith.
Hey, Helen. Hey, you've got another true-false quiz for me?
Yep. Our trivia podcast, Go Fact Yourself, used to be in front of a live audience.
True. Turns out that's not so safe anymore.
Correct. Next. Unfortunately, this means we can no longer record the show.
False. The show still comes out every first and third Friday of the month.
Correct. Finally, we still have great celebrity guests answering trivia about things they love on every episode of Go Fact Yourself.
Definitely true.
And for bonus points, name some of them.
Recently, we've had Ophira Eisenberg, plus tons of surprise experts like Yardley Smith and Suzanne Summers.
Perfect score.
Woo!
You can hear Go Fact Yourself every first and third Friday of the month with all the great guests and trivia that we've always had. And if you don't listen, well, then you can go fact yourself.
That's the name of our podcast.
Correct.
Woo!
And we are back on Heat Rocks talking about Etta James' 1960 album, At Last, with Valerie June.
Valerie, one of the other albums that you had nominated for us to discuss today was T-Rex's Electric Warrior. And of course, you covered T-Rex's song Cosmic Dancer from that LP recently in 2019. How did you approach covering that song in particular?
Oh, wow. Well, I've loved the song for a long, long time, many years. And I wanted to do a cover of it because I was getting ready to go and make a new record. And I had been playing my song Astral Plane for like a full record cycle, so maybe 2 years on the road. And people were really responding to the cosmic nature of the lyrics and things of that sort. And there's similarities between that song Astral Plane and its theme and Cosmic Dancer. He's talking about how you have to start to think of time before you were born. You were dancing, you know, right into this body, and you'll dance right out of this body. And so that was one thing that drew me to the song and wanting to cover it, was continuing that theme, which I would say is kind of metaphysical. But then the other thing is just the production and the arrangement, so deep. And I wanted to kind of get my band members listening again, because they already love T-Rex and everything. But I wanted them to listen again and get in that headspace again of thundering drums, of intense swirling strings. Tony Visconti's production on that record, Electric Warrior, is kind of amazing. And especially on that song, it just, there's a surprise around every corner with the weaving guitar coming in, and it's got like a rusty sound to it. So my pedal steel player was able to pull that off. It was really wonderful to cover it.
Thank you so much for sharing that anecdote. It really is one of my favorite songs from your catalog. And it would have been equally fun, I suppose, to have talked about Electric Warrior, but let's bring things back to Etta James. As we always ask our guests, what is the fire track off of this album for you?
Fire track. Wow. Well, I think I have to go with All I Can Do Is Cry, because when she says that, I just want to get down on my knees, fall down on my knees and cry. Cry about anything and everything. Just get it out. Happy tears and sad tears. Just get it out, you know.
All I can do was cry. I was losing the man. could do was cry.
Valerie, I'm so glad that you chose this song in particular, because the backstory behind it is so incredible. Assuming this is true, but the way that the common lore around this is that, so the song was written by three people. Billy Davis is one of the main co-writers, and supposedly he was inspired to write it because he used to date Gwen Gordy of the Motown Gordy clan. But she left Davis to date Harvey Fuqua, who of course famously duetted with and dated Etta James before At Last. And Davis, Gordy, and Fuqua are all co-writers on the song, which means Etta James ended up recording a song featuring a songwriter lamenting losing his love, who is another songwriter on the same song, to one of the song's other songwriters who used to date James himself. And if that story is even remotely true, I'm not sure I know of a more twisted backstory behind a broken heart song than this, because that is incredible. That is insane.
What better way to use the energy of a broken heart? That's all I can say. Come together, all three of y'all, and make a song.
Morgan, what's your fire track off of At Last?
You know, I have to say, I love Sunday Kind of Love. I just, that's the one for me.
Yeah.
There's something in the way she sings that song. And I know there are better, more interesting adjectives than what I'm about to say, but it's just so sweet to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
She sings it sweetly. I just have a reaction to it when she sings it, and it's the lyrics.
Someone to enfold, to keep me warm when Mondays and Tuesdays grow cold. Love for all my life to have and to hold.
There's just something about that song. And to me, it taps into this other Etta, this inside Etta that we get access to on this song. And that's the one for me. You would think it would be At Last, but it's not At Last. It's Sunday Kind of Love. You?
Well, mine is At Last because, as has been well established, I am the most basic person in the mix. And so I always go with the obvious pick. I'm going to come back to At Last in just a second, but I'm so happy that you picked Sunday Kind of Love. I'll talk more about my favorite moment, and which comes off that song. But I did mention the first half. So I'm pretty sure my introduction to Sunday Kind of Love was, so back in the early 00s, Dockers had a campaign. Dockers, the khakis company, I think offshoot of Levi's, maybe, whatever, like Dockers khakis. And they had maybe not the best chinos out there, but they had some great ads in terms of music placement. And I remember very distinctly this song was in one of their ads. And I hate to say it, but I kind of feel like this is when I first heard it. I was like, who is this? And I need to go back and listen to this more. And yeah, I'm out here shouting out Dockers. Shout out to whoever was music supervising those ads, because besides Sunday Kind of Love, one of the other ads from that same era by Dockers used a song that I was already familiar with, but I thought was a great choice, which was Marlena Shaw's cover of California Soul. And I don't know who was doing the music supervision back then, but they had Morgan Rhodes level quality of taste back in the early 00s out there.
Just I appreciate
putting
that.
Jams, putting heat rocks into ads for, you know, mediocre khakis. So yeah, shout out to whoever that person was. But yeah, At Last is my fire track because do I even need to explain it? It's as we've been talking about, especially in that first half, it's just one of the greatest songs of the last, at this point, what, 60 years of American pop music history. And also just the idea behind At Last. It's about anticipation. It's about waiting. It's about payoff.
I found a dream that I could speak to. A dream that I can call my own. I found a dream.
I would also add, I feel like At Last falls into that category of songs, even though obviously many people have covered it, right? We listened to Aretha before, but I feel like At Last falls into the category of don't cover it, because you're not going to be able to outdo Etta. And I'm not even sure it's one of those songs that you can kind of put a spin on in a way that it can even remotely hold a candle, no matter what you change with it. I just feel like it's, and I don't hold a lot of songs at this level of preciousness, which is that just leave it in its original state and don't touch it, because there's nothing else that you can do to improve or flip on it. And to me, At Last, that is the Etta James song. And there's no other rendition that I would ever care to listen to, because I know it's not going to be what Etta did with it.
Oh, no, man, you're going to hate my cover of it. I'm joking.
Let's talk about favorite moments. And this was a tough one for me, because it really came down between two different openings. It's either the opening of At Last, which we've talked a little bit about, but I think I have to go with the opening of Sunday Kind of Love. You know, I like it. I love it when singers open a cappella so that you know the music is going to drop at some point, and that you're just waiting for that moment where the voice tails off just enough so that the band can kick in. And I think the way in which this song sets that up is just perfection.
I want a Sunday kind of love, a love to last past Saturday night.
And we're going to go back to what, you know, what you're saying in regards to this song being a fire track and the lyrics for it. You know, I want a love that lasts past Saturday night is such, it's such a good line. It's such a good line. Oh man, this song's amazing. Yeah,
it is. It is, and it has so much drama. It's so soundtrack ready. I'd have to be precious and careful about, you know, because I love the song so much. I'd have to be precious and careful with where I want to place it. And if there are any music supervisors listening to this right now, just let me get that one. You know, let me have one. Don't beat me to it out here. But yes, that would be one that I would love to play somewhere. I just have to be, make wise decisions, I say.
Morgan, how about you? What's your favorite moment off of this album?
You know, I got to say, and it's another one of my favorite songs, but I got to say, one of my favorite moments comes on Anything to Say You're Mine. And it's at the, probably the 120 mark, when for that moment, there are no words. Like, words don't even matter. She's got a, in gospel singing, it's just when you hum. It's like when the spirit takes over and you run out of words and you just hum your way through it and then you come back. She has a similar moment on 120, but it's so deep, it's so emotional. It's almost like, it's like yearning.
Anything to say you're mine.
And I would have loved to have been in the booth, you know what I'm saying, when she recorded that, because I feel like that was just, wasn't intentional. That just happened in the spirit of the moment of the recording, that you just, the emotions take over and all you can do is moan, you know. I just love that. That's one of my favorite moments. That's the favorite moment for me, or one of them off the album.
And Valerie, how about you?
Oh, I love that. Mine is similar to that, where it's just, this moment was captured in the recording, and I don't know if it would be redone, but it's actually something that Harvey sang on the song, If I Can't Have You. On one of the verses, he says, I just don't want to be bothered with nobody. But as he's saying it, his voice kind of slips on the word don't. And so he does a stutter, and it's like, you can't redo that. You know, nobody can. We do that. So I love that stuttering point of his voice on that song.
I just don't want to be bothered with nobody. Unless I'm bothered with you.
Is there a song that you would love to cover?
I really love the song Tough Mary. It doesn't really get much attention, But if you think about Mary and nursery rhymes or whatever, she gets a little bit of a hard life story thing with Mary. And this song doesn't give Mary a break either. So I really like that one. I have a friend, she's passed now, but she was one of my best friends. And she was so particular about everything. And her name was Mary. But that's the thing that I loved about her was how tough she was. Yes. So I'd probably cover Tough Mary. Don't bring me flowers, Mary. Don't bring me the sea. Just bring me diamonds that'll suit me fine. And I'll love you forever.
It's funny that you picked that one, because when I was listening to this album, it's one of the songs that really jumped out to me, because as much as there are these timeless classics off of this album, Stormy Weather, Sunday Kind of Love, At Last, of course, there are other songs that are very much of their particular era. And Tough Mary was the one that I immediately thought of, because that sort of jump blues sound, the way in which the saxophone is playing, like it existed in this very narrow block of time within blues and R&B production that got moved past. And in addition to the use of the background singers, which you don't really hear on a lot of the other album. And that song, it's, I don't want to say it's incongruous for the times, because it completely fits into an album recorded in 1960, but it does feel incongruous to the rest of the album, given how iconic some of these other songs are that feel like they could have been recorded at any time. This one feels like, no, this is 1960 right here on Tough Mary. So
it is true. And the background singers, they're not very many songs that have it featured, but the ones that do are powerful. You love that. Yeah. I don't know who's singing the backgrounds with Etta, but whoever it was had to be sharp.
Valerie, if you had to describe this album in three words, what three words would you choose?
I would say powerful. Inspirational. And fierce.
Yes.
From the cover to the power of the voice to the inspirational aspect, it's fierce.
Yes.
For you are mine.
Before we bounce out of here, we always like to leave our audience members with something else to step to. And so we have recommendations here for if you enjoyed listening to At Last in our conversation about it, what you should check out next. Morgan, you want to lead us off?
You know what? I would say stay with Etta James. And I would get into the 1970 album, Etta James Sings Funk. We talked a little bit about all the things that Etta James can do. And I think you need to get into this album. And I just want to read a portion of Bob Christgau's review of that. He says, as you can read on the back sleeve, funk isn't a style or something like that. It's just, well, Etta. And I think this is overall, you hear Etta in here, but on a bunch of different songs, and particularly the song The Sound of Love, because in my lifetime, I could never imagine Etta James covering the Bee Gees, but here we are.
For me, I was going to suggest people check out the Sugar Pie DeSanto anthology, Down in the Basement, The Chess Years. DeSanto was a contemporary of Etta James. They both recorded for the Chess Brothers, and they also duetted on a few key songs, including the song that gives this anthology its title, which is In the Basement, which I think came out in maybe 65 or 66. To me, it's one of the best funky R&B tunes of that era. And DeSanto herself, I think, has had a really fascinating life and career. She's notable for me, partly because she's one of the earliest pop artists of Asian American descent to have a notable recording career, preceding her fellow Afro-Filipino, Joe Bataan, by a couple of years. And so if you've never heard DeSanto stuff, and you've never heard her and Etta James duetting, I mean, they are an incredible pair on a couple of those songs, including In the Basement. So yeah, check out that Down in the Basement, The Chess Years anthology. Valerie, bring us home. What do you recommend?
I will stick with Etta James, and I will recommend her final album, which is called The Dreamer, because she ended up passing that following year. It's her final album, and I'm also curious about, when I'm listening to singers, how their voices age. So I think by encouraging you to listen to her final album, you'll be very curious about what's happening between At Last and the record The Dreamer, the whole career.
We had our times now, good and bad times. I can't forget them, and I sure ain't gonna regret them, no, no. Remember Side Street, where we used to meet.
Well, that will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Valerie June. In late 2020, you put out three new songs, which was, I think, your first new studio material in quite a while. And if I'm not mistaken, you have a new album in the works, though. By the time this airs, maybe it'll be on the verge of coming out. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the new album is called The Moon and Stars, Prescriptions for Dreamers. Mm. And I think we need a whole lot more mindfulness in this modern world that we're living in, especially after going through what we went through in 2020 with the pandemic and systemic racism, us finally coming up and addressing so many of the issues. So we need to have some healing and some calming and energizing in the way of what kinds of great changes and shifts can we make in the way we treat each other. Kindness and mindfulness. That's what the record's trying to emphasize.
Looking forward to that. And where can people find more information about you and your music online?
Oh, I have a website, ValerieJune.com. I'm on all the music channels from YouTube, Amazon, Spotify, and all the socials under The Valerie June. Thanks so much for having me. I love speaking with y'all. Let's do it next Saturday.
Yes.
I'm with that. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.